NHPR.com. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and here are some of the voices from this week's top news stories.
Today, we are signing into law the most significant piece of health care legislation that the state of New Hampshire has seen in decades.
Make no mistake, my colleagues, the Common Core state standards raise the bar with regard to teaching and learning.
We're going through states where we need to get Republican senators to help us get to 60 votes. We were in Maine yesterday calling on Susan Collins. We're here today calling on Senator Ayotte to support increasing the minimum wage. This shouldn't be a partisan issue.
I feel pretty good about where we are right now, and obviously some things would have been better had we gotten an earlier start. But in many ways, the timing was fortuitous because our efforts really ramped up once the kinks in the website were worked out.
The pot industry is not a cash cow. It is not a cash elephant. It is a cash herd of elephants.
From the top, that was Governor Maggie Hassan signing a bill making New Hampshire the 26th state to expand Medicaid. State Representative Mary Stuart Guile defending the new Common Core standards for public schools. Brad Woodhouse of the Democratic National Committee speaking in New Hampshire as part of a nationwide Raise the Minimum Wage campaign. Karen Hicks with Covering New Hampshire on how many Granite Staters have thus far signed up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act. And Republican Representative David Hess disputing claims that legalizing marijuana could bring cash to state coffers. Again, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. Let's hear from you as we examine these headlines and others, including the strong likelihood that state gas taxes will go up by 4 cents a gallon. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests for this week's roundup are Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. And Jeff, welcome back. Great to see you.
Great seeing you.
Also with us, Kevin Landrigan, political reporter at the Telegraph of Nashua. And Kevin, thanks for making time out.
Great to be here.
And Dean Spiliotis is here, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thank you as well.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Dean, I want to start with that Medicaid signing. It made national headlines, the fact that New Hampshire has now joined 25 other states in doing this. How significant is this, Dean?
It's certainly significant. You'll recall that when the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, they did say, however, that states had the right to decide whether or not to expand Medicaid. And so we, as you mentioned, had been one of six states who had been still on the fence about whether or not to accept the federal dollars. As we're going to discuss, the legislature came up with a compromise solution that relies on subsidies to buy private insurance. But nonetheless, it was a big day for Governor Hassan. She's pushed quite hard on this. As we saw, she signed the legislation with 18 pens. That's something presidents like to do. You know, they sign basically one pen per letter.
And then they give them out to
supporters.
And then
they give them out. Yeah. Exactly right. It's a nice tradition. So, I think it's a victory for the Obama administration. It's something that Governor Hassan has pushed for quite strongly. As we know, it got hung up in the special session last fall, and then we had this compromise a little while back. So definitely success for her, and it means that roughly 50,000 New Hampshire citizens will have some opportunity to get health care coverage.
Well, I definitely want to ask Kevin about some of the particulars of New Hampshire's approach, because you're right, Dean, it's different. But a political question for you, Dean. It was noted by several commentators this morning that no Republicans were at that signing ceremony, although this was a bill that came out of the Republican Senate.
Yes, that is right. And I think some people would say actually that the Republicans got a lot of what they wanted in terms of shifting this away from a standard expansion of a federal program to a program that relies more on the private insurance market. And as we noted, using federal dollars to buy into that market. So, you know, the Republicans in the Senate got a lot of what they wanted. It is true that even though Governor Hassan and some Republicans have talked about this as a sort of a New Hampshire solution or a bipartisan compromise, there were no Republicans at the signing ceremony. It is an election year, and I don't think that Republicans, given sort of the unpopularity among conservatives of the Affordable Care Act, I don't think Republicans wanted a visual standing with Governor Hassan while she signs this bill, even if in practice, they were happy to reach a compromise.
Kevin, what's different about this New Hampshire approach to Medicaid expansion?
Well, it does, as Dean said, it does rely on folks, these 50,000 low-income adults, ultimately obtaining private insurance. The reason why this really got adopted was all about branding. The compromise really emerged because Senate Republicans were able to say, well, it's not really Medicaid expansion. These folks are going to be on private health insurance. And Governor Hassan got to say, well, it really is Medicaid expansion because we're using Medicaid money to provide that health insurance. And at the end of the day, for probably the first year to 15 months, all these folks are essentially, most of them are going to be on Medicaid. For the next month or so, there are going to be about 13,000 people who are able to get private insurance, who will be able to get subsidies to obtain that insurance. But starting July 1st, the rest of them, the 38,000 others, essentially will be put into the Medicaid program, the managed care program.
The traditional Medicaid program,
while we apply for a federal waiver to allow all of these folks to then be transitioned into private insurance.
Now, what happens if we don't get that federal
waiver? If we don't get the waiver, then within 90 days, the program essentially phases out, and we need to obtain the waiver by the end of March of 2015 under this new law. That's why Senator Jean Shaheen, the senior member of the delegation, essentially urged HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, say, look, you've got to approve these waivers as expeditiously as possible. We need this to happen. If it doesn't happen, then the whole program falls apart.
Okay, so there's that deadline, which from what I've read, Kevin, sounds like people think the feds are going to give us that waiver.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's another possibility of this program shutting down. That was written into the bill as well, right?
Where, yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. If federal reimbursement under the program to support it, the Medicaid money, falls below 100% at any time, then the program also ceases at that point. And under the Affordable Care Act, of course, federal reimbursement will go below 100% for these folks over time. And by the year 2020, it could be as low as 90%. This program also essentially goes out of existence by the end of 2016 unless the legislature readopts it. So at the end of the day, this is a significant achievement for Governor Hassan. There's no question about it. But the next governor and next legislature are going to have to deal with this again.
You know, yeah. Jeff, it's my understanding that the state's business community has long supported this. How come?
Yeah, they have actually. And well, the primary reason that they say is because they say that the hospitals basically have been absorbing the cost of treating patients who don't have any kind of health insurance, Medicaid, nothing. And because of that, hospitals have to charge more for other patients, which is basically saying these are the employees of these businesses because most of the people are covered by employer-backed insurance. And they're saying that it's just increasing their premiums and it's increasing the cost of health care. That was the major argument. And, it's pretty compelling because especially when you realize that hospitals have not – the state's hospitals have not exactly been treated very nicely by the state government over the last several years with taxes and what have you. I just want to say one other thing about this whole these other deadlines. In the corporate world, they call those poison pills. And you know, well, you know, when you have a deadline, it might be expired in 2016, 2020, and that's really what it is. It's a really a great example of how why they say don't watch them creating legislation. It's like you're not watching making sausages.
Right. That
it really
saying.
Is. You know, if you look at the details of this, it is kind of the compromises are just right there.
Well, we just got a caller who corrected us on a point of fact. This person says that there were no Republican state senators at the bill signing, but there were two Republican state representatives. So thanks to that person for calling in. We always like to get it right. So
yeah, essentially, Senate President Chuck Morse, as folks here at the table know, Thursday was a very busy day. It was their last day to get their work done. This came essentially during the lunch break of the Senate session, and the Senate Republicans said they needed to caucus about the afternoon and early evening activities. That's why they weren't there. I kind of subscribe more to Dean's explanation of it all than that excuse.
Well, and speaking of, though, it was a busy day at the State House yesterday for both the House and Senate. And Dean Spiliotis, it was crossover day. Now, just what does that signify, Dean?
Well, this is the day. It sort of marks the midpoint of the legislative session in which the House, in theory, has completed all the work on its legislation, sends it over to the Senate for consideration, and the Senate does the same thing. So, for example, the Senate passed casino legislation, gas tax legislation. That'll now go to the House. The House passed a minimum wage bill and other pieces of legislation that will now go to the Senate. So it's really kind of viewed as sort of a moment to kind of take stock of how the session is going.
Yeah, and what are the politics at this point in time, Dean? I mean, how would you describe the politics up until now, and how might they shift from here on out?
It's interesting. I think there are sort of two things going on. There are some pieces of legislation that are moving through the pipeline, as we just saw with Medicaid expansion, as I think we're going to see with a gas tax, there's already sort of a process of negotiation behind it. But then there are other pieces of legislation, like I mentioned, that minimum wage legislation to raise the minimum wage to $8.25 and then up to $9 in a subsequent year. That was passed by the House. It's going to be a very big part of the Democratic agenda in the midterm elections, probably not going to pass in the Senate. So it's really sort of the politics really are a combination of sort of wrapping up these compromises that have been underway for some time, like the gas tax, but also each side, you know, making a statement with certain pieces of legislation like the Democrats will do with that minimum wage legislation in the House.
Always with an eye to 2014, right, Dean?
Absolutely.
Well, and coming up, the House changes its mind on recreational use of marijuana, saying no to a bill allowing a limited amount after it said yes earlier this year. We'll find out more. Keep it right here on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR reaches listeners all over New Hampshire. If you own or operate a business, you can get your message to the entire state by simply becoming an NHPR underwriter. Visit the support page at nhpr.org to find out more about our many underwriting opportunities. More of our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange and at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. It's the domestic hour of the Friday News Roundup. New Hampshire weather, mostly cloudy today, chance of rain showers, highs lower 40s, northern Coos County ranging lower 50s along the Mass border. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank, providing complete business banking services to small to medium-sized businesses in New Hampshire. Information at centrixbank.com. And Symphony New Hampshire Orchestra and Chorus performing Fauré's Requiem in Bizet's Symphony in C on March 29th in Nashua. Tickets and information at symphonynh.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're covering some of the major stories that made headlines this week. This includes the signing of Medicaid expansion by Governor Hassan yesterday. Later on, we'll talk about how the legislature continues to examine the idea of expanded gambling here in New Hampshire. You can join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-848-9377. And Jeff Feingold, Kevin Landrigan, Dean Spiliotis, a couple other big, big issues that got examined at the State House this week. And Jeff Feingold, once again, the House voted on legalizing small amounts of marijuana for recreational use. But help me out with this, Jeff. A couple weeks back, the House voted in favor of legalizing small amounts of pot. And then this week, it voted against the same idea. What's happening?
Yeah, well, basically, I think it was really the governor and people in law enforcement have really done a full court press on this. And obviously there's also a sense that this would never go anywhere in the Senate. So they brought this thing back because the argument has now been changed to about the revenue. That's a lot of the supporters saying this will be great for state revenue. And several of the members, including Representative Hess, who had this quote at the beginning of the thing, have made this argument that that's just fantasy money and it's not going to be anything. And I really do think that a lot in the end, a lot of them just got cold feet. This would be a huge step for the state of New Hampshire, and we've legalized medical marijuana, it hasn't even started working yet.
Yeah.
So the argument against it was kind of took the day from several other people who's kind of said, maybe I'll think a little bit harder about this vote.
Well, and from what the debate sounded like also on the State House floor, Kevin, a lot of folks seem to say, let's just see what happens in Colorado. Let's just wait.
Yeah. And also the argument essentially was that last year, as you know, we legalized the medical use of marijuana for folks with really chronic pain conditions. And that law hasn't started yet. We're really about 15 months away from that, from dispensaries being open and people having access to that. So that was another argument as well. I agree with the notion that Democrats, more than Republicans, essentially got cold feet on this, as you can see. I found about 25 people who had changed from mid-January when the first vote was taken. And of those 25, 18 of them were Democrats and only 7 were Republicans. I think Governor Hassan's arguments were fairly persuasive that this bill isn't going anywhere. And it's certainly what we saw in the Medicaid marijuana debate. That took 5 years, really, to build a critical mass to get lasting support in both the House and the Senate. I think legalization of marijuana is coming in New Hampshire. I think it will happen someday, but I think we're several years away from that happening.
I agree. I have to say one other thing, though. I think a lot of the members of the House were subject to ridicule when they voted for it the first time, because here's the same House that wouldn't support casino gambling, but they'll say, we'll support legalized marijuana. So there were certain quarters of people who were very just kind of saying, well, what's going on here? What is this? Is hypocritical? What is this?
Yeah,
so.
Dean.
Yeah, and I've been saying for some time now that I think the taxing and regulatory implications of legalizing marijuana right now are problematic. In fact, the House Ways and Means Committee studied these issues and recommended killing the bill. So, I think as both Kevin and Jeff have said, we have medical marijuana. It's been slow to get up and running, which was one of the concerns with that. Watching the Colorado example, there certainly is some potential there for revenue, but they've run into all kinds of issues with, even things like banks and what to do with the money that comes into the marijuana shops. There's just all kinds of regulatory issues. And in fact, I think all of the departments in the state who testified on this issue testified against it. I agree. I think we'll get it at some point, but it's going to take more kind of incremental steps over time.
Again, our number here in the exchange to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Join us as we examine some of the top headlines of the week, whether it's the expansion of Medicaid that we talked about earlier, this conversation about legalizing marijuana, and in a moment we'll talk about the possibility of higher gas taxes here in the Granite State. You can join us on these headlines and others, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, I can't count how many times we have talked about gas taxes on these news roundups. We have talked about this, Kevin Landrigan, for a long, long time. The Senate now this week voted to increase the gas tax by 4 cents a gallon, but it's not forever. What does this bill look like?
Yeah, it's kind of a patchwork quilt compromise that the Senate Republicans were willing to accept. You may recall that last year they couldn't swallow a 12-cent per gallon increase that the House had passed. So this is a, This essentially is going to raise the gas tax 4.2 cents, and it's tied to the state's top transportation priority. It will provide the bonds to complete the widening of Interstate 93 from Salem to Manchester. Once those bonds are paid off, this after 20 years, the tax increase goes away. So the legislature, 20 legislative sessions from now, would have to decide in the interim period whether they want to make this tax permanent or not.
Well, it's hard to even think about legislatures 20 years from now and what they might be like and what kind of cars we'll be driving and so forth.
And this is kind of typical of New Hampshire legislature and tax increases. They very often like to advertise these tax increases as temporary. Yeah. Jeff and Dean will recall we've had a lot of tax increases on the books for temporary periods, and legislatures in the future have to keep extending them. Sure. And certainly this one is in no danger of being repealed anytime soon. But it's a significant compromise, and I think it stands a very good chance. It's also kind of merged in with the 10-year highway plan, which makes significant changes in transportation projects going forward. It also pays for the second transportation priority, which is the Sarah Mildred Long Bridge in Portsmouth, from Portsmouth to Kitty. Real critical bridge for the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. There's a rail spur that goes over that bridge. The Portsmouth Naval Shipyard needs that operating to continue to renovate its LA-class submarines. The Navy has essentially said to the state, if that bridge isn't repaired, you know, we have another option. Puget Sound in Washington is the only other place where these LA-class subs are repaired.
Oh, wow.
So we can take our bags and move to Puget Sound and take all that business with us. It would really put the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard in danger of being on a future closure list.
That's a big threat, isn't it, Kevin?
It is.
And it has been on closure lists before. So,
it has.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to say this is another issue of the gas tax that it wasn't unanimous support, but a large segment of the business community supported this, you know, the BIA and other groups supported the great gas tax increase. And I had an interesting conversation the other day with several bankers. And I was struck by the disdain for just saying, why only 4 cents? You know, we really have a lot more problems than this. If we take economic development seriously in this state, we have infrastructure problems that need to be addressed, and 4 cents is basically a drop in the bucket. They said that we need to have it, but the feeling I came away with was that, you know, they think they could stomach some more because they think there's a lot of needs, especially in terms of economic development in New Hampshire.
Okay, and I've got a question for all of you about different business groups chiming in on big issues like the gas tax, like Northern Pass. But let's also go to our listeners. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup as we look closer at some of the top headlines of the week. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Matt's calling from Wilton. Hi, Matt. You're on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Happy Friday.
Thanks.
So I was I called in. I wanted to chime in on the legalization of marijuana matter you guys were speaking on. As a veteran from this war and a very loving person of the state of New Hampshire, I think that, you know, there was a bunch of people that voted for it a couple weeks ago that supported it, and then the all of a sudden they fell off and there's no more support to that end. I was really in favor of the medicinal value, but now our governor, she doesn't cover PTSD under reason for medicinal marijuana. And so I was a true advocate for this, really following and trying to make sure that this bill, you know, speaking as an advocate for a lot of veterans, we feel like criminals. You know, I just think that it should have gone the other way. And I think the Senate honestly totally supports it. And I think our governor is just trying to keep it from moving forward.
Matt, thank you for calling in and thank you for your service. And I'm sorry to hear, sounds like he is struggling with PTSD, or at least wants his other fellow veterans who struggle with PTSD to have access to medical marijuana. He's right, Dean. That's not one of the conditions under New Hampshire's medical marijuana bill that you are allowed to get a card for.
Right. And in fact, that was part of the negotiation on the medical marijuana bill, was to Governor Hassan and others pushed for a narrowing of the different types of conditions and medical issues that would allow you to qualify. There was also some debate about whether or not you'd be able to grow your own. That's why they decided to go with these dispensaries around the state. You know, as Matt said, I don't know that it would pass in the Senate. You know, the Senate did go along with medical marijuana. Legalizing for recreational use is a different issue. I mean, it's unfortunate for veterans who find it helpful for treating PTSD that it's not allowed in the state. But this is one of those issues that, you know, this was a little bit unusual. It has passed in the House four or five times now. But I don't see it going anywhere in the Senate, even if it had passed.
Okay. Well, Matt, thank you again for calling in. And gentlemen, a couple minutes ago, we talked about different business groups, the BIA, the different chambers of commerce, chiming in on this gas tax issue. Kevin Landrigan, the Nashua Chamber this week commissioned a statewide poll, a UNH survey, showing a plurality of would-be voters supporting the Northern Pass Project, 46 to 35, roughly 20% undecided. That's why it doesn't add up to 100. Any surprises there, Kevin?
That's pretty consistent with what some other surveys have shown. I think when you see the Northern Pass projects, it's really all about where the people are. There's real demographic split here that certainly south of Concord, there's a whole lot more support for Northern Pass than there is north of Concord. The one question they didn't ask in the poll I thought might have been pretty revealing is, how would you feel about Northern Pass if high transmission power lines went through your community? It's interesting. They asked this question about casino gambling, which has strong support in every poll and in this poll as well. It had about 62% support for casino gambling. Then the question was, what if the casino were in your town? And it was 50-50. The support drops considerably. And I suspect the same would be true of Northern Pass. And that's what we're seeing here is a lot of opposition where this power line essentially is going to run.
Well, and there was some movement on the casino issue, too, this week in the legislature. But another question on this poll, again, commissioned by the Nashua Chamber of Commerce, Jeff Feingold. So the chamber not only commissioned this poll, but has gone on record in support of Northern Pass, as has the Manchester Chamber. So, Jeff, what's the point of these chambers putting themselves on record? What does that accomplish?
Well, it's part of this concerted effort, as Kevin said, in the southern part of the state, because there is a lot of strong support for it. And business groups have, a number of them in the southern part of the state have come out in favor of this.
Because they think it will lower energy prices.
The whole idea of needing more energy and, you know, in terms of the regional market and the whole of New England, and there's concern about being reliant on only natural gas. You know, that's been going on for over a year now, this whole discussion. You know, it's the same way we need the hydropower from Quebec to kind of add variety to our sources. But I've always been struck by the conversations I have with people in the southern part of the state versus the northern part of the state on Northern Pass. It's like two different worlds. If you go north of the Notches, in particular, there's no support. I'd be shocked if you could find maybe 10%. But you go south, and it's a different world. They just don't. I think there's been a disconnect for many years between the North Country and southern New Hampshire. And I think this is a perfect example of Ross Cattell came up with that thing.
The two New Hampshires,
and this is a perfect example of it.
Our phone number here in the exchange from whatever New Hampshire you live in is 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we catch up on some of the big headlines of the week. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. NHPR Exchange, all one word. Dean Spiliotis, I did want to turn to a purely political issue with you, and that's that Vice President Joe Biden was in New Hampshire this week, came to Nashua for a quick visit. How come Joe Biden was here?
He was here to tout job training programs and partnerships between business and government. He praised New Hampshire Works, which is a workforce development program. You may recall when Governor Hassan ran for office, she talked a lot about her innovation agenda and retraining people to move them into a 21st century workforce, et cetera. So he was here basically to provide support. He visited an employment office in Nashua with Labor Secretary Thomas Perez, yes. Of course, people wanted to probe him about 2016, but he said quite bluntly, I'm here to talk about jobs, not my job. So, you know, it's just a way to kind of raise visibility for workforce training and development.
So not a lot of presidential speculation when the vice president came. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, well, I mean, he sort of resisted attempts to, which are inevitable and predictable, to get him to talk about the presidential race. He was here in his capacity as vice president. No great surprise that he wasn't willing to entertain any detailed discussion about that.
Okay, and there was a lot of discussion, Kevin Landergan, about why the state's three congressional Democrats were not up there with Vice President Biden, Annie Custer, Carol Shea Porter, and Jean Shaheen.
Yeah, they all essentially said, we got a day job, and that's why we're not there. Jean Shaheen was chairing a subcommittee in the Senate, the Senate Appropriations Committee. The Senate also voted on Russian and Ukraine issues on that day, and both Congresswomen from New Hampshire also were down there, and there were votes in the House as well. But as we've seen before, when the president is popular or someone very popular comes to the state, you don't mind missing a vote or two. I think it really speaks to what the administration is now going through vis-a-vis the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. It's unpopular, and it's affecting this administration's popularity. We've certainly seen it here in New Hampshire.
How much hay should we make out of this, Jeff?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a political calculation on their part, I think it kind of reflects what the tight races are that they all face. Potentially, Senator Shaheen, I'm not quite sure yet about that, but the other two, the congresswomen, both face tough races. And basically you can't win for losing. You know, it's not, you know, if they had to decide, was it more important for me to be in New Hampshire and bask in the glow of the vice president's smile, or do I, you know, say I'm doing my job? Because they would have been attacked if they came and say, why weren't you there for the vote on Ukraine? Why weren't you, you know, you can't win.
I see. Yeah. Dean.
Right. Yeah. Jeff's right. I mean, basically, you can't win, right? If they're there, they're going to be seen as kind of focusing on political calculations rather than policy. If they're not there, they're going to be accused of focusing on political calculation. You know, this is a time-honored discussion among political scientists about whether or not candidates should be seen with popular and or unpopular presidents and vice presidents. I think, you know, you can make too much out of this. You know, the reality is, people are not going to remember that Joe Biden was here for a day talking about jobs in 2016. You know, there's always the possibility that you get a photo op that then shows up in somebody's campaign ad. But I think you can read a little bit too much into this. So I tend to sort of give it that kind of weight.
Coming up, opponents of the new Common Core school standards failed to make the grade in the New Hampshire House. We'll find out what happened. Also, we'll get an update on more casino efforts in the legislature. It's the issue that just won't go away. We'll find out more and keep hearing from you. Join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, President Obama extends the health care enrollment deadline for some applicants, and the Senate votes on an aid package for Ukraine. Then an Egyptian court sentences to death hundreds of people tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from New England College, now offering 7 MBA programs on-site and online. Program details and registration information at nec.edu. And Quickwater Canoe and Kayak on the Merrimack River, Concord, providing rentals, sales, and demos of lightweight canoes, kayaks, and paddleboards by Delta, Swift, and YOLO. QuickwaterCanoe.com. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, we check in on how enrollments under the Affordable Care Act are going here in New Hampshire on the final day for signing up. Join us right now on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup with your questions and comments about some of the headlines that we're covering. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 892-6477. Dean Spiliotis, Kevin Landrigan, Jeff Feingold are with us in studio. And gentlemen, let's go back to our listeners. Lori's calling from Chichester. Hi, Lori. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. There was an article in the Concord Monitor on March 19th about a pipeline that has already been approved carrying tar sand oil from Montreal to Portland, going through Lancaster, going through the White Mountains, going by Waterloo. It's very hard to find information about it. Apparently, the my first question is if anybody on your panel knows about this and can comment on it, and then if they don't, I'm astonished that all the stuff about the electric wires, and then here's oil going through on pipes that were built in World War II.
Yeah, Lori, thank you so much. I did see that same story, and it was one of those, wow, I didn't know that, Jeff Feingold, either.
Yeah, it's a discussion that's been going on for at least a year, as far as I know. It's a pipeline that goes from Portland to Montreal that ships it going west, and what they want to do is reverse the flow and bring this tar sands oil that's from out in the western part of Canada, which is the same oil that they want to ship through the Keystone Pipeline.
Sure, the big controversial one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a mini idea of that same thing. There'll be the oil. It's not a done deal. It's very much still under discussion. I know that there have been several politicians who have opposed it. I do believe that the governor of Maine supports it, but. It's not anything that, you know, they're not flipping a switch anytime soon. But I do think this does kind of reflect the what's been going on in New England for the last several years, is this whole idea of what our energy mix is. And people have become much more sensitive to the idea that New England's at the end of the pipeline when it comes to natural gas, in terms of other kinds of sources of energy. And that's what gives these kind of things momentum, whether it's right or wrong. I do think that people are getting kind of – there's certain people that are getting kind of panicky about the idea of what our energy mix is.
It does seem like there's more and more attention
yes.
to this issue and more awareness of some of the
yes,
trade-offs
absolutely.
And the position that New England is in. All right, Lori, thanks for putting that on our radar, and definitely more for us to follow up on for sure. The number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's take Bob in Swansea. Hi, Bob. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. How are you folks doing today?
Fine.
Thanks for the great show. So one of your panelists commented a little bit ago that the Affordable Care Act was immensely unpopular, and that's why the elected officials didn't show up for meeting with Joe Biden. And I kind of take issue with that. I just saw a poll yesterday that said the country's almost split, but it's a little more popular than unpopular, and most people are just so tired of hearing about it, they want whatever's wrong with it to be fixed and move on. I kind of found that the narrative was a little disingenuous and not really a journalistic standard.
Yeah, Bob, I appreciate the point. I do wonder about that, Dean Spiliotis.
Sure.
Is the political ground shifting on the Affordable Care Act?
Well, let me unpack that a little bit, because there's sort of two things going on. We were talking about the Medicaid expansion signing with Governor Hassan, in which no Republican senator showed up. And my comment was, well, you know, they don't necessarily want their photo snapped at the signing ceremony given the midterm election. I think that's a fair statement in general, given the polling I've seen. The separate issue is with Joe Biden and whether or not our members of Congress avoided showing up with him because the administration's popularity is sagging. You know, I mean, I don't know that you could make an argument that the ground has shifted a little bit, in the sense that, you know, despite the difficulties with the sign up that the Obama administration encountered with the Affordable Care Act in October and November of last year, we're approaching the deadline on March 31st, and they're up over 6 million, and their original goal was 7 million. We're also ahead of the curve in New Hampshire, given the predictions for New Hampshire sign-up. So they seem to be getting on track. The polling data I've seen is still very mixed on the issue. But it also has that kind of feel of sort of congressional disapproval, where everybody sort of disapproves of Congress, but they seem to like their particular member of Congress. So it's starting to feel like that a little bit with me. So I do agree with Bob that, you know, maybe people are just a little bit tired of hearing about it. Again, this is going to be one of those things where, you know, one of the narratives – you know, increasingly in this country, we see these polarized narratives where Republicans have one narrative and Democrats have the other. The Democratic narrative was correct in 2012, and Mitt Romney lost the election. But we'll see at the midterm election which one of these competing narratives is true. But the polling data is all over the place on this.
Bob, thanks a lot for calling in. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Kevin Landrigan, we have to talk about casinos in the state legislature. Senator Lou D'Alessandro, the main proponent of expanded gambling in the legislature, is trying again. What's he doing now, Kevin?
Well, it's sort of a night of the living dead in the Senate yesterday. I mean, we had every expectation that the Senate really wasn't going to give up on this. And you often see this in election year when one legislative body really has a tough time accepting the outcome from another body. And so they continue to try and pursue an agenda. That's certainly what we're seeing here. There is some glimmer of hope among some senators, Lou D'Alessandro being chief among them, that this casino bill, which allows for two casinos in that have to be 30 miles apart from one another. Presumably one would be in the southern tier and another one being in the lakes region or further north, that that there are a number of libertarian Republicans who opposed the original one casino legislation because it created a monopoly for one business in New Hampshire that would dominate the marketplace, and that that some of these folks would see that having two casinos would create some competition and some and potentially certainly two could lead to four, could lead to eight over time. But as we saw in the House, it died by 29 votes a couple of weeks ago. So you really would have to change the minds of about 15 or 16 members. I think that there's not much water in that towel as you wring it out. I really don't believe it'll change the outcome in the House, but that's certainly the Senate's thinking.
So the Senate passed this this week, and it goes over to the House now since
yesterday
was crossover day.
Right. And the House, the only reason they're able to do that is that when they killed the bill in the House, they refused to essentially take a move that drive a stake through its heart, which it's a motion called indefinite postponement, which essentially means we're not going to even talk about this subject for the rest of the two-year session. But they refuse to do that. And by refusing to do that, that means this bill will be debated in the House.
Jeff?
I do think there's something else in this bill that's a little different. And it's an enticement to the cities and towns to provide, I think, $25 million in revenue sharing, because several years ago the legislature and the governor took away revenue sharing from the cities and towns. They used to provide a certain amount of money to cities and towns. And in this bill, Senator D'Alessandro's bill, it would bring back some of that money, which, you know, it's possible that could bring some votes over as well. I don't know. It remains to be seen. This is like Sisyphus to me. I mean, I think that's what Senator D'Alessandro keeps pushing it up, and it keeps going down. I mean, well, maybe Wile E. Coyote. I don't know. The other. But, I mean, yeah, you have to admire his determination. But it's starting to make me feel like the issue of, like, you know, income tax. It's like, you know, we've gone through this many times, and it doesn't work. It doesn't get the support.
Dean?
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about this for months now, and, you know,
for years now.
Right. but I was thinking back, you know, last year during the debate, that the Hassan administration's theory was that if you just develop the proper regulatory framework, that will ease some of the concerns in the House. And I was skeptical of that. That has turned out not to be the case. I mean, my sense with this particular issue, having watched it in two states over a period of about 25 years, is people typically are really dug in on principle. I mean, there are things you can do. I mean, D'Alessandro is basically, it's the kitchen sink, right? He's got all the House regulatory framework. He's got the $25 million sweetener. He's protecting the Verizon arena by limiting the number of seats. He's got everything in there. But I don't know that it's going to in any fundamental way change the balance. The only way you're going to get this through is to return a legislature with a different composition next time around, where perhaps more people support it.
Yeah. Again, the number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Jeff Feingold, we should talk briefly about the Common Core. These are the new educational standards coming to New Hampshire schools, being implemented in part already. There are a bunch of bills, Jeff, this week aimed at Common Core. what, without getting too specific, what were these bills seeking to do, just broadly?
Well, some sought to either water it down or get rid of it completely. It's been, because there's a very strong faction of people who are just against the Common Core, the idea of top-down education, you know, federalized education, that kind of stuff. But the House did support, ended up supporting a bill, or was it a bill or a resolution that would basically said we support the Common Core. And there was a pretty heated debate. I think there were five bills trying to undermine the Common Core, and they did not approve any of those. But I find it interesting that, you know, this is another issue, which is kind of interesting, that the business community has come out very strongly in favor of it. It's been a real full court press by people like in the BIA. Tom Raffio, who is the CEO of Northeast Delta Dental and also chairman of the Board of Education, State Board of Education, has come up very strongly with op-eds. And we've run them, several of them, in our paper from other people.
So a lot of powerful voices like this.
Yeah, and they see this as a solution or at least a way to improve education in New Hampshire. Opponents, it's like casinos. I don't think these people can talk to each other anymore, because if you talk to people who are against Common Core, it's heavy-duty opposition.
We have to close out, gentlemen, by... did you want to jump in there, no, Kevin, on Common Core?
No, that's okay.
Okay, one of everybody's favorite topics, the weather. And in particular, this pretty amazing winter that we've seen. Ice out on Lake Winnipesaukee, Kevin Landrigan. This is a great topic. And after a record early ice out in 2012, just 2 years ago, remember that? We were wearing flip-flops in March 2 years ago. I remember that. It's looking like it's going to be pretty late this year. Kevin, what's ice out, first of all? Why is this a big deal?
Yeah, it is. It's certainly an important marker for the tourist season. And ice out isn't when you can just see a little water on Lake Winnipesaukee, which obviously is a very big lake with some very deep waters. So it's not unusual for some part of the lake to be exposed, but in order to have ice out, you really have to have it in the five ports where the cruise ship Mount Washington ports, in Center Harbor, Alton Bay, Weirs Beach, Meredith, and Wolfboro.
So you got to cover all those spots.
All of those have to be open in order for it to happen, and some open earlier than others. For example, salmon season in New Hampshire opens on April 1st, and Alton Bay often does open in April. You'll see a lot of salmon fishermen there. But it looks as if the record is May 12th, and it's quite possible with some ice as thick as 3 feet in some of these ports that it may hit that record.
Wow. Jeff, you're from the Lakes region. Well, fill us in on the culture of this.
No, I'm over in New London. Sunapee is a little smaller, but it's the same idea. But I'll tell you, though, this really reflects how cold this winter has been. We haven't had one of these in a long time. I've been around long enough here to know what real winters are like, and this was pretty close to a real winter. But we've had early ice outs for quite a number of years recently, and this is just going to be one of the, you know, a real ice out. It's going to take a while. It's, you know, I've heard people talk about skiing. They'll be skiing in May at some of the resorts because there's so much snow.
You know,
May.
I have to say, a couple weeks ago, someone asked me if I wanted to go cross country skiing, and I said no. I'm really not interested.
It's done. Just bring me the spring.
Well, it's part of the unique culture of New Hampshire. Dean, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, the other big indicator we've been talking about, in addition to the ice out, is the maple sugaring season.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
It's off a tremendously slow start up north. We had that big weekend, which is a weekend. Lots of people, there are open houses at lots of sugaring operations around the state. You know, a little less problematic for people in the south. You know, some people, I'm not an expert on this, but people who are say that you can still produce a lot of maple sugar in April. But nonetheless, March is off to an unusually slow start.
Yeah, NHPR's Amanda Loader reported over the weekend from one maple farm that's only boiled three times so far this year. She reported that by the same time last year, the farm had already finished production. That's slow, Kevin Landrigan.
Yeah, it's really slow. But hopefully, I mean, you heard some of the farmers essentially say, well, the fact that trees have been frozen this long could make them maple sugar even more sweet. I'm not sure.
Well, farmers need to be eternally optimistic.
They do. I'm not sure how much marketing was going on there. But it's interesting because, as you know, people who live in New Hampshire if you live here long enough, you always develop sort of what is the eternal sign of spring. Everybody has it, and it's all very personal. For us, it's can we see our mailbox from our dining room window, you know, because the plows throw the snow up so high. And just this morning with the freezing rain we had overnight, we can just see the very top of the mailbox. And that
kind
of
tells us. Well, congratulations,
Kevin. Yes.
Actually, I saw the top of my composter the other day. So, you know, we're all down to 2 feet of snow.
All right, whether it's ice out, composters, maple syrup, we're all looking for it. Well, next week on The Exchange, we'll be sitting down later in the week with Corrections Commissioner William Wren. Real interesting time in corrections, given this national conversation about prison reform. And as I mentioned earlier, on Monday, we'll do a last minute check-in on the Affordable Care Act with that Monday deadline for insurance marketplace sign-up. So that's what we're up to next week. How about you, Jeff?
Actually, it's interesting. We've talked about energy today, and that's really what we'll be looking at over the next couple of weeks in the business review. It's this whole idea of what is the energy picture in New Hampshire really like, and you know, the competition or lack thereof or whatever.
All right, so that could take – you could spend a year on that. That's a big
you know,
issue.
I know. That's thank goodness for the internet, because the paper can't run the stories that long.
Sure. Kevin, how about
a
you?
Joke.
Actually, I'm going to be on vacation next week, but in the State House, there's a big hearing on the repeal of the death penalty in the State Senate next Thursday.
The House passed it.
The House has
correct?
Passed it. The governor supports it. It's really close in the Senate. It goes before the Senate Judiciary Committee. There's only five or six senators whose minds haven't been made up, and two of them are on this committee, so that hearing could be pivotal.
Wow. Okay, we'll be keeping an eye on that and probably talking about it next week in
Sounds
the roundup.
Good.
Dean, how about you?
Yeah, a couple of these big-ticket items, like Kevin mentioned, in the legislature, but I'll also be watching the U.S. Senate races continue to develop. The Shaheen folks are sort of launching a counterattack against Scott Brown. They've already got an ad up running against him. He's not even a declared candidate yet, so never a dull moment in that race.
All right. Well, Dean, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, he's author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Kevin, good to see you. Have a nice vacation.
Thanks very much.
Kevin Landrigan, political reporter at the Telegraph of Nashua. Jeff, great to see you as always.
Great
Thanks.
Seeing you. Thanks.
Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with a big day for the Affordable Care Act. Monday's the deadline for enrolling on healthcare.gov. Then, how best to pay for the great outdoors, with debate over funding New Hampshire Fish and Game. And later, we sit down with Corrections Commissioner William Wren on issues before his department amid a growing national discussion over prison reform. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with the Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing repair for knee and shoulder injuries for UNH athletes, sosmed.org. And Centrix Bank, see beyond with Centrix Bank, customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and non-for-profit organizations, online at centrixbank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. President Obama announces his administration has met its revised goal of enrolling 6 million people in healthcare exchanges. As open enrollment draws to a close, the White House also extends the deadline for applicants who were blocked by technical problems.